God uses people to illustrate how much God is angry with nations. In other words, God tells this guy to marry a prostitute to illustrate how much God is really upset with an entire nation of people. And that's an elevator pitch, a perspective that many of us have. Another one is that God is a scorned lover. Angry, we just are trying to make up our love and appreciation and somehow get there. And then the third one is just that God is wooing us and alluring us and enticing us back into freedom, beauty, and inspiration. And that's the one we're going with, all right? Now, these are important. They're very important because after we have kind of this beautiful come out into the wilderness in chapter 3, Hosea starts to change a little bit. And things start to take on a little different perspective. And one of the things I love as we change is that we're going to get to something very concrete. And if you come to Branches very often, you realize that often we talk about mystery and God in spirit here and there. And you could believe this. And it's sometimes just very nebulous, ambiguous. And I know that's frustrating to some of you. We do hold on very strongly every now and then. Love. Okay, no ambiguity here. This is love. We do this. It's solid. It's concrete. Grab onto it. Practical. Tangible. And in Hosea, we get another one. And these are rare, so we're all excited, right? And this one is maybe even more tangible, more practical, more, oh, wow, that actually is something I could think about often, which is why I wanted to spend 2 weeks on it. And are we ready? Drum roll. Here it is. For I desire mercy, not sacrifice, and acknowledgement of God rather than burnt offerings. This is God speaking through the prophet. Very rarely do you get, this is, oh, God, what do you want? What makes you happy? What brings you joy? I desire mercy. Mercy, kindness, steadfast love, grace, forgiveness. That's what I want. And by the way, not sacrifice. I desire kindness, steadfast love, grace, not sacrifice. And I desire acknowledgement of me. Can mean a lot of things. Around here, I think it means acknowledgement of God in everything all the time. And we talk about it frequently, and so often it's so easy. Oh, God was in the song. No, God is in everything. And God says, I desire that, just this awareness of me, rather than your burnt offerings. Okay, now this has all kinds of implications. First thing is, just this whole book of Hosea, most of us read it as, wait, really? This is kind of the theme? I mean, this whole book is about some dude who has to marry a prostitute. It's a pretty big sacrifice to make a point, right? I mean, how can you say God doesn't want sacrifice when you're telling this guy, yeah, go make the ultimate sacrifice. You're going to stay with this woman who's going to cheat on you over and over and over and just to make this point for a nice book in the Bible. And that's very often how we view it, but kind of what we're trying to get at here is, or you could come at it from mercy perspective. Steadfast love, kindness. This is a book that's going out of its way to illustrate that. Now, this is, again, very important because as we move on in Hosea, we can read this book in two ways, and this comes to our view of God. Is God sacrifice God? I need some things before I'm able to do some things. And you can think about your own theology, but this is generally what it is. You can fill in the need things and the do things, but God is up there. I need some things before I can do some things. And if you don't give me the things I need, then I'm going to do some other things. When I do those things, they're not very nice. And you can read the entire book through that lens. Or you can read the book through mercy. Steadfast, love, kindness, grace, forgiveness. And it's very hard to read it through that other lens, and I'll be honest with you, maybe I'm an emotional wreck lately. I dropped off our kid at college 2 weeks ago, although that's going great, everyone. I mean, I've not cried about that recently, in the last 2 weeks, actually. It's been really good. But I'm reading Hosea with this lens of mercy, and I'm at my computer, and I'm weeping. I'm weeping for this Old Testament prophet that doesn't seem like something I would weep for. Because when you get this lens, oh man, it is wildly beautiful. So what I'm going to attempt to do today is bring some people up, Rick and Donna. We're going a little crazy here this morning. Come on up, guys. Rick, you're going to sit here. You guys, give them a hand. Look, they're nervous. Come on. Let's see. Do we have another mic? Did not plan that well. Mandolin mic. Okay, perfect. Okay. Right there, yeah. Okay, so we're going to start with one, and I'm going to make a comment a little bit after one, and then we're going to kind of get into it a little bit more. You want to stand up? You can.
Just for a minute.
Great, okay. Rick. Rick. Okay, first off, two amazing people. You need to get to know them. Donna got most inspirational at our five-year party, if you were here. Yeah. Amazing. Rick, actor, you may recognize him, local celebrity, been around town, been in some zombie shows. Not sure if many of you recognize him, but this dude's going to bring it. So he's kind of going to lean towards sacrifice God. Donna's going to lean toward mercy God. We may have a little soundtrack just to really amp up the emotion around here, because I'm a soundtrack nut. Rick, why don't you start us off with a little section here from Sacrifice God.
Hear the word of the Lord, you Israelites, because the Lord has a charge to bring against you who live in the land. There is no faithfulness, no love, no acknowledgement of God in the land. There is only cursing, lying, murder, stealing, and adultery. They break all bonds, and bloodshed follows bloodshed. Because of this, the land dries up, and all who live in it waste away. The beasts in the field, the birds in the sky, and the fish in the sea are swept away. But let no one bring a charge. Let no one accuse another, for your people are like those who bring charges against a priest. You stumble day and night, and the prophets stumble with you. So I will destroy your mother. My people are destroyed from lack of knowledge.
Whoa. Okay. Dude. Rick, I'm a little scared to be in church right now. Okay? This is what happens, though. Maybe not to this degree, although, honestly, to this degree. Look at America. Look at our land. It's terrible. It's going to waste. Everything is terrible. If we could only start doing this and that and this and that and appeasing the God, then God will somehow love us again. This is the language I hear every day, all day. Okay, now, there is a little different perspective. Donna, you don't need to act as, do what you need to do. I don't want to, you know, like, oh gosh, I got to follow that. I mean, I'm a little nervous to even follow it. Okay, but Donna, a little different perspective.
Hear the word of the Lord. Is this working?
Yeah.
Hear the word of the Lord, you Israelites, because the Lord has a charge to bring against you who live in the land. There is no faithfulness, no love, no acknowledgement of God in the land. There is only cursing, lying, and murder, stealing and adultery. They break all bounds, and bloodshed follows bloodshed. Because of this, the land dries up, and all who live in it waste away. The beasts of the field, the birds in the sky, and the fish in the sea are all swept away. But let no one bring a charge, let no one accuse another, for your people are like those who bring charges against a priest. You stumble day and night, and the prophets stumble with you. So I will destroy your mother. My people are destroyed from lack of knowledge.
Wow. I mean, does anyone else feel this? You're suddenly like, oh, whoa, wait. That's a very different take. And this last line, we talked about it last week, Da'af Elohim, the knowledge of God. And even that line, I will destroy your mother. Da'af Elohim, this knowledge of God is this reception of God into the soul. Some say even a comforting of God. And this walking along through the suffering with God, this relationship with feeling God's pain. And even in this, as you start to get into it, you hear this God of saying, I'm going to destroy your mother. No, I'm not. It's almost as though you grieve with God, right? Incredibly different takes. So I'm going to let them do a few more, and we're really just let it sink in. I'm not going to interrupt this time. You guys just go for it.
The Israelites are stubborn like a stubborn heifer. How then can the Lord pasture them like lambs in a meadow? Ephraim is joined to idols. Leave him alone. Even when their drinks are gone, they continue their prostitution. Their rulers dearly love shameful ways. A whirlwind will sweep them away, and their sacrifices will bring them shame. What can I do with you, Ephraim? What can I do with you, Judah? Your love is like the morning mist, like the early dew that disappears.
The Israelites are stubborn, like a stubborn heifer. How then can the Lord pasture them, like lambs in a meadow? Ephraim is joined to idols. Leave him alone. Even when their drinks are gone, they continue their prostitution. Their rulers dearly love shameful ways. A whirlwind will sweep them away, and their sacrifices will bring them shame. What can I do with you, Ephraim? What can I do with you, Judah? Your love is like the morning mist, like the early dew that disappears.
Ephraim is like a dove, easily deceived and senseless, now calling to Egypt, now turning to Assyria. When they go, I will throw my net over them. I will pull them down like the birds in the sky. I will hear them flocking together. I will catch them. Woe to them because they have strayed from me. Destruction to them because they have rebelled against me. I long to redeem them, but they speak about me falsely. They do not cry out to me from their hearts, but wail from their beds. They slash themselves, appealing to their gods for grain and new wine, but they turn away from me. I trained them and strengthened their arms, but they plot evil against me. They do not turn to the Most High. They are like a faulty bow. Their leaders will fall by the sword because of their insolent words. For this, they will be ridiculed in the land of Egypt.
Ephraim is like a dove, easily deceived and senseless, now calling to Egypt, now turning to Assyria. When they go, I will throw my net over them. I will pull them down like the birds in the sky. When I hear them flocking together, I will catch them. Woe to them, because they have strayed from me. Destruction to them, because they have rebelled against me. I long to redeem them, but they speak about me falsely. They do not cry out to me from their hearts, but wail on their beds. They slash themselves, appealing to their gods for grain and new wine, but they turn away from me. I train them and strengthen their arms, and they plot evil against me. They do not turn to the Most High. They are like a faulty bow. Their leaders will fall by the sword because of their insolent words. For this they will be ridiculed in the land of Egypt.
They set up kings without my consent. They choose princes without my approval. With their silver and gold, they make idols for themselves to their own destruction. They sow the wind and reap the whirlwind. The stalk has no head, it will produce no flour. Were it to yield grain, foreigners would swallow it up. Israel is swallowed up. Now she's among the nations like something no one wants. For they have gone up to Assyria like a wild donkey wandering alone. Ephraim has sold herself to lovers. Although they have sold themselves among the nations, I will now gather them together. They will begin to waste away under the oppression of the mighty king.
They set up kings without my consent. They chose princes without my approval. With their gold and silver, they made idols for themselves to their own destruction. They sow the wind and reap the whirlwind. The stalk has no head, it will produce no flower. Were it to yield again, foreigners would swallow it up. Israel is swallowed up. Now she is among the nations like something no one wants. For they have gone to Assyria like a wild donkey wandering alone. Ephraim has sold herself to lovers. Although they have sold themselves among the nations, they will begin to waste away under the oppression of the mighty king.
The days of punishment are coming. The days of reckoning are at hand. Let Israel know this. Because your sins are so many and your hostility so great, the prophet is considered a fool, the inspired person a maniac. The prophet, along with my God, is the watchman over Ephraim, yet snares await him on all his paths and hostility in the house of God. They have sunk deep into corruption, as in the days of Gibeah. God will remember their wickedness and punish them for their sins. When I found Israel, it was like finding grapes in the desert. When I saw your ancestors, it was like seeing the early fruit of the fig tree. But when they came to Baal Peor, now they sin more and more. They make idols for themselves from their silver, cleverly fashioned images. All of them, they work the work of craftsmen. It is said of these people, they offer human sacrifices. They kiss calf idols.
The days of punishment are coming. The days of reckoning are at hand. Let Israel know this. Because your sins are so many and your hostility so great, the prophet is considered a fool, the inspired person a maniac. The prophet, along with my God, is the watchman over Ephraim. Yet snares await him on all his paths and hostility in the house of his God. They have sunk deep into corruption, as in the days of Gibeah. God will remember their wickedness and punish them for their sins. When I found Israel, It was like finding grapes in the desert. When I saw your ancestors, it was like seeing the early fruit on the fig tree. But when they came to Baal Peor, now they sin more and more. They make idols for themselves from their silver, cleverly fashioned images, all of them the work of craftsmen. It is said of these people, they offer human sacrifices. They kiss calf idols.
Give them a hand. Thank you. Thanks. I'll tell you, Donna told me before church that she was reading it this week and she couldn't stop crying either. And I know it's a little dramatic, it's a little this or that, but I hope you start to get something really, really, really important, and that is when we read the Bible, even in little small groups, when we read the words of the New Testament, of the Old, it's always instantly in the voice of Rick. It's where we default. Oh, gosh, God, oh, man, just again, I'm disappointing. Again, he's angry. He, of course. Again, the Father is disturbed with me. Again, and we never read it so rarely. We have to force ourselves to get to this point of, ah. One of my favorite passages, the inspired person will be a maniac. The inspired person in the Hebrew is one who has breath, and it is in the feminine breath of God. The one who comes with the feminine, gentle breath, life of God, will be considered a maniac. Whew, pretty appropriate. Okay, so here's my summary of Hosea. And we're going to get into more some of the practical next week. Today is the dramatic. And the idea that tone matters, context matters, emotion matters, feeling matters. Sacrifice versus mercy. You could end it right there. What is the tone in which you read the Bible? What is the tone in which you relate to God? What is the tone in which your theology dominates? So here's my take on Hosea. Pitchforks. We love pitchforks. And I'm talking about when we're all in a mass of people raising our pitchforks to go burn down the castle. Because what we love as humans are scapegoats. We love someone to blame, basically another way of saying someone to sacrifice. We acknowledge there must be a sacrifice somewhere, and so we will find the sacrifice. And we have all sorts of people we will find. It can begin for many of us, and you'll hear it often, in a parent's basement, where a boy and a girl do things they are not supposed to do. And that is the problem with this generation. Boys and girls are in their parents' basements doing things they are not supposed to do. And if we would just preach more abstinence and more sexual integrity and more this and that, then God would return to our nation, and they are the scapegoats. It's their fault. It's this generation who's addicted to all kinds of things, and they're bringing us all downhill, even though the statistics say that's completely false. But they are the ones we will bring down. And then when they're doing something in their parents' basement, sometimes it's kids in here today. I wasn't planning on that. Sometimes there's something that shows up in the girl's uterus. And so suddenly, and I would say this, suddenly that fertilized egg becomes a scapegoat. Take it down. Kill it. It will be the blame. It will take responsibility. It will have no voice. Destroy it. But then how quickly do we go to the women who make this decision? Now they are what is wrong with our country. And it is because of those women making those decisions that everything is falling apart in our country. And if only we could stop them from making those decisions and let's go burn down their castle. It's their fault. And then very quickly, it's the organization that provides this. It's their fault. So we must stop all their funding. We must tear them down because it's their fault. And as soon as our government will oblige, God will return to America because that's where God was. So now it's their fault. But if the girl doesn't have the abortion, and if the girl raises a child in poverty and in those neighborhoods that none of us want to go to, and if that girl and that child struggle throughout their life and they're on welfare, well, it's their fault. Take them down. They are the ones ruining our country because they don't work hard enough and they don't earn it like I do. And so we need to get rid of those people and that system and tear that down. And if that girl happens to live in another country and she decides to keep her baby and raise her baby, and if she happens to immigrate into America, well, now it's her fault. And we need to build a wall and keep these people out because only if we could get rid of those people, then they are the ones who are at fault. And if that girl decides to raise a baby, and if that baby is raised in loneliness and being constantly told they're outsiders and they're not the right skin color, they're not the right sex, they're not the right amount of wealth, and they're continually shoved to the side by society and culture and the church, and they're lonely and they're angry and they get their hands on a gun and they go to a college campus and kill people, it's their fault. They are the ones that are ruining America. Take them down. They will be our scapegoat. And if the daughter, if that young lady raises a child who happens to be attracted to the same sex, and that same sex actually wants to get married, and the government lets them, it is, of course, their fault. Now we must bring them down, and they will be our scapegoat for why everything is going wrong. And if that young lady happens to raise a son in Syria, and that son happens to become a terrorist, well, of course, it's his fault. And now we can bring him down and kill all of them. And actually, it's their whole religion's fault, so we should just take down the entire religion because they are the ones to blame. Best case scenario, that young lady raises a son alone in poverty, and that son fights really hard and works really hard and does all the things that Americans are supposed to do, and that son is actually elected president of the United States, and that son claims to be a Christian and often acts like one, it's his fault! Bring him down. He's lying. He's not a Christian. He's that religion that's destroying the world. And we can bring them all down at once. Because it's their fault. Or if that young lady raises a son who ends up becoming a pastor, and this pastor is overwhelmed by grace and love and mercy, and this God that is everywhere, because this young man has grown up in a world where he had nothing, and suddenly the world is alive and full of wonder and color, and he preaches this constantly, well, it's his fault because he's a heretic. And if these kinds of people would just stop preaching this love of God message, and we would return to the true gospel, then everything would be fine. Or, how about this one? If that young lady has a child and raises the child, and that child becomes a prophet, and that prophet speaks to the church and says, guys, the message has been the same over and over. I want mercy, not sacrifice. I want steadfast kindness. I don't want your purity rules and all of these things you are doing, and everything you're doing is off. You're missing the point. Then they kill him on a cross, and they begin a religion that that is all about a God who wants sacrifice. Right? And that's where we are today, completely missing the freaking point again. This is Hosea to me. And man, I would drop some bad words because they're needed. God is saying, put down the freaking pitchfork. Drop it. If you want to know who to blame, blame the systems, and they're political, and they're religious, and they're societal, that all they do is drive you to find someone to blame for all of the bad things in this world, and just start showing some kindness and some steadfast love, because that's always been me. I'm trying to woo you back. That's been my story from the beginning. And stop speaking in these tones of, Rick, I'll tell you what, people. Put down the pitchfork. Oh. Hey, you're okay. You're loved. Man, I'm sad. I grieve with the pain in this world and the struggle. But at the end of the day, what can I do for you? How can I show you love and kindness and grace and mercy? Pope Francis was here last week, and I don't know what you think of him, but I would probably lay it out pretty simply. If you don't like him, you're more of a sacrifice God. If you do like him, you're more of a mercy God. Pope Francis is said to have put mercy at the top of his list of Christian ethics, because he says when mercy fails, everything else fails. And so you see a pope who wanders around and speaks words of mercy to everyone. In fact, so much so that he starts to bug me a little bit sometimes. Because I like the pitchfork for the people who have pitchforks. Right? Man, look at all those idiots carrying their pitchforks around. Let's burn them down. Pope Francis, what are you doing talking to her? What? Oh, no. Ryan, no, see, you think you got it. You didn't get it. Did you just hear the words of Hosea? No. See, I'm a God of mercy, kindness, steadfast love, reception with me, walking through life with me. I don't want your stupid sacrifices. Stop it. I want you to realize I am kindness and love and grace and forgiveness, and I want you to speak tenderly to the world. Would you all stand? Dismiss you with this. This week, my prayer for me and for all of us is that the way we see the world is marinated in mercy. The people you see in your house, the people you see at work, the people you see on the street, the people you see on TV, I pray that we all see them through a lens of mercy. And my prayer is that everything you hear this week, when you hear encouragement, when you hear criticism, when you hear things you don't agree with, when you hear ignorance and foolishness and heresy and evil, I pray that you and me hear it with mercy. I pray that everything you smell this week, which sounds weird, but it's true. I pray that we smell the sweet fragrance of mercy in this world, and not, as God calls it, the stench of burnt offerings. I pray that we, whoever we interact with, whoever we touch in a real, tangible way, that they feel the touch of mercy from God through us to them, and that we feel the touch of mercy from God. And finally, I pray that whenever we speak, whatever words we say, to those we're close to those we meet, to those we see at Starbucks, to those we see on the street, to those we see at the movie theater, I pray that every word we speak, we think about, and I pray it is soaked in mercy. Because we serve a God who desires us and this world to be marinated in mercy and is sick of the sacrifices and the scapegoats and the blame. Have an amazing week. Go in grace and in peace. You're dismissed.